It was a few things that came together. This phrase for me, when I went to post-war Beirut, when people would say it, it had a deeper, different meaning, which is like you, like me. If we're the same, whether you die or I die, it's no matter. If I have to die for you, I will. So that's kind of in the back of my mind. And then when the exhibition started, it was also you have to find a language that everybody in the world can relate to, and the titles, once you translate them, they sometimes don't work in other languages. So I like this because it had an aspect of gibberish to it, and it also visually is a beautiful way, the way that it's spelled. And then from there on, it's like I'm American, Arab American, and I'm dealing with Arabic artists, so it's almost like me, like you. There's something about me that's like you. That's why I'm here too. And then there's also, you guys are from different countries. There are various of them that are in strife, and some know who sympathize totally. So it's like, hey, you guys, like me, like you, there's something there. And then I think ultimately it just means also to Westerners to acknowledge that refugees are the same as them, that we're very much similar, much more similar than we really believe. And a refugee also in that state of existence has the vision of, you know, why aren't you helping me? Don't you see me here? Don't you understand that I'm a part of you? I am you, and you're not helping me.
Does the one who is the refugee look to, because you made the reference to some countries in strife, some not, do they look not only to those who share their culture in the region for that relief, that help, perhaps to bring them out of being refugees, or are they looking more to the world to answer that problem?
They are not looking at the world to answer their problem, nor the other, because in a way the Iraqis were always talking about the Palestinian situation when it happened. That, I think that's the original one right there, the original seed. And they talked so much about how to help the Palestinians, what to do to solve the situation. But then afterwards, they themselves were in a horrifying situation. I think in the moments of bombardment or moments when your life is directly threatened, it really, really does feel like you're a very, very tiny, minuscule thing that's being crushed by a big, huge thing. And you also know that the world is out there. There's billions of people out there. And where are they? You know, don't they know that I'm about to die?
Was there one experience or story that first drew you to all of this? Was there one artist? Was there one piece? Was there one group of people that lit the spark of wanting to tell and represent this story in the exhibit that is here?
The story was written as a theater script first, and so and those were the Kurdish refugees, which were the ones that you could say touched me the deepest, because they really had no support at the time from anybody. You know, they were even in a worse situation than the Palestinians because of many reasons. So this began as a theater script, and the artists did a visual storytelling with that script. So we were exchanging texts and reading the texts together, deciding what act, what scenes they would paint, and they did that. And in the process, it was also very nice because they could relate so much to the text, and so they were channeling their own life experiences into this painting via the script.
As one walks in to the gallery space, there may be an instinct to start in one direction, walk through the gallery in one direction. Does that matter how one takes in the pieces here in terms of relating that to the story that's being told through the script? Is there a theme and a line to that story? And can one experience the same or perhaps get a different meaning if one walks through and takes in pieces in something other than the quote-unquote natural way to walk around a gallery?
The exhibition is divided into three sections, which are, it's all Act One of Mitli Mitlak, and the entrance of the gallery on both sides is Scene One, the middle part is Scene Two, and the third part is Scene Three. So you can see that in the entrance there's kind of like a visions of a dreamy girl who's relating to phantasms in her solitude and going a bit off the edge. Suddenly, if you keep walking, a man enters the scene and suddenly she's blindfolded and has a rock in her mouth and a head is on fire. And then in the second section, all of a sudden you have a more masquerade feeling. And so you have like a costumey feeling and a spiritual feeling, because exactly in this party scene, it is the actors of the Beirut Theater that are celebrating the reopening of the theater after 17 years of war.
And we might say that that is the part that we happen to be sitting in right now, at least in the gallery as we talk today.
Yes. Yeah. And in the third part is when, after this huge masquerade party where even they put on an act that somebody is dead, and they even improvise a scene that a spirit master is coming from the out-of-life to take her spirit out to the out-of-life, to the halls of double truth, and then they become so happy that the scene worked in this party, and they're all singing and dancing, and it's a very high energy. And then right after that, in the third part of the gallery, you have exactly a drop to the other extreme, which is the exodus begins, a devastating situation where people have been just hit by chemical weapons, and they just take anything they can take, and with them, their children, their shoes, a pot maybe, and they just start walking in the mountains because they have to get to another country because their country wants them dead. So they're walking, and for weeks, and a lot of people die along the way, and they don't have anywhere to bury the dead people. The sick people, they have to carry them on their shoulders. They have the children. They're sucking on the snow to stay alive. And so this is embodied through the works of different artists from different countries. And you can really see the ones who are refugees, what kind of work they produce, as opposed to the ones who are maybe in a country that receives refugees and who sees a lot from a distance, refugees living in camps. And also that escalates to the massacres. There's one artist from Tunisia who's also worked on the aspect of the massacre and the chemical weapons. And you can see that the military control that he shows in his paintings are actually painted like a child. It's a very poetic what he has done. You see, the contortions of the bodies are in positions of like families hugging each other in the final moments, and cupping that with some symbolism, like I don't know, flowers, fragility, and there are some drawings as well.
This time that you have the gallery on the gallery space and the exhibit on display at Central Michigan University. What is this stop in the time that you have had with this art? I'm trying to get a sense of how long you have been with this art, with this story. Are we a first stop, one of many stops? Because it seems that art can sometimes represent a moment in time, or a story can continue to reflect time. And certainly, if we follow the news, these stories have not all ended. These stories continue to come to us in different ways as to the conditions of people around the world. And I wonder what it's like to revisit, walk through, see a single piece, and how it is reflecting even the news of that particular day.
Mm-hmm. This is the second exhibition, so it's really hand in hand almost with the first exhibition that took place in Detroit at the NNAMD Center for Contemporary Art. And so we're just launching the exhibition now, and it comes right at a time where we are talking about refugees in the United States and immigrants and building walls. So even the Middle Eastern artists from the different countries involved in this exhibition are aware of this, and we are discussing it, and the catalog that will be published is also referring to this project as one about refugees, America, and cultural hybrid theories.
There is, as I had a chance earlier to walk through the exhibit, and I mentioned this to you before we sat down, at least the way, starting on one side and walking through where my ending point was, back near, on the opposite side of the gallery, but back near the door back to the outside, mm-hmm. It seemed like that was the place that I was meant to take away a final thought, because there is that quote that refers to, and I'm paraphrasing, and I'm sure you can do a better job at this than I am, I didn't write it down exactly, but the idea that through it all, we want you to know that in our story, we survived. What is the meaning of that as a takeaway?
It's interesting that for you it was a takeaway, because I had my first vision of it was as the very beginning, like walking in and just seeing that message. But I really like the way you experienced it, so I think I might put it at the end now.
Wondering of that message, and now that we talk about it further, I'm curious, because you see it as a beginning message. I saw it in the way that I walked through as a final message.
It can
speak perhaps to both.
Mm-hmm. It's definitely, and this message, it's a very personal one also. I don't know how to explain it to you. I was using a writing technique where I apply Reiki, and so you receive like a message in words. And I was using that to write something, and that was the message that came. And actually it was, you can see the signature of the person who supposedly is responsible for saying that message, and it's actually my grandmother. So it's from their life in the village in the 1930s, where there was war. Her and many others also lost many children during that situation, and that's very hard for the children at the time, because they don't even know that death exists, and all of a sudden their brother or sister doesn't exist anymore. The hunger, just the war going on, and then they lived also then the Civil War as well, and I think just this the struggle of those times, and it, I think it was something that my grandmother, who she couldn't speak. I've been in America, and when I went to Lebanon, she had you know, something happened, and she couldn't really formulate words, though she was very normal and everything. She just couldn't, her ear as well. So she couldn't really speak to me as well. A slight language barrier until I could really speak Arabic better. And I think it was like an unfinished thing that she just wanted me to know that thing.
There are some very beautiful expressions, some very powerful and disturbing to make one think images that are on display here. I want to thank you for bringing the exhibit to CMU, for sharing that story. And as you continue to share that story and spread these stories, all the best as well. Thank you so much for taking the time to talk with us.
I thank you so much. It was a pleasure to speak with you, and I'll always remember this exhibition here because it's been a very pleasant experience in Mount Pleasant. Thank you.